All right, joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, he is the president of hockey operations down in Pittsburgh. We're very familiar with him up in Toronto, and it's always good to have him on. And here he is again, Brian Burke. How you doing, Brian?
Good, thanks, guys.
We're just talking about the NBA and all the trade action. We've had these conversations before. I know you love a trade, and I remember asking you about the Blue Jays trade years ago when they made a monster deal, and you said you loved that Alex just kept adding pieces to it. Do you still feel the same way? You love blockbuster deals and how good it can be for the league?
Yeah, it was Cliff Fletcher who first taught me that. I made a very small trade when I was a rookie GM, and Cliff said, if you got a one-for-one, ask the guy if you could do a two-for-two. Usually you can line up a second guy. Then ask if there's a three-for-three. He said, if you get to a point where it's four or five players from each team, it's a stop-the-presses trade. And that was the advice I never forgot from Cliff. Cliff gave me lots of other good advice, too. He's a wonderful man, but that's what he said. Make them bigger. If you got a one-on-one, and I taught Dave Nonasat, the same thing. Okay, we got a one-for-one. We got Hayes for Burke.
Yep.
Can we make it bigger? And what would you put in if I put in this guy? And the next thing you know, you got a three-for-three, and you got people's attention.
I like it. It's absolutely 100% true. Speaking of Cliff Fletcher, obviously that Leaf Flames deal, that worked out pretty well. I wonder where Gilmore would have been on that list, like number three or number four. Can we slide Gilmore in here and make this a 10-player trade? I think that worked out pretty well. But
it's like a, when we made the deal for Dion Phaneuf, Daryl asked for three players, then asked for a fourth player. And I said, well, we're not doing it unless it's a four for three. And we actually waited overnight to see if we could do it before he changed his mind and put in Keith Ollie. But it ended up being what it was, Schustrom, Ollie, Phaneuf.
Hagman?
And Hagman went back the other way.
He went the other way with Stajan.
Right. Hagman, Jamal Maris, Matt Stajan.
Wayne Primo, I think, was in the day?
No, I think Ian White.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's how many trades you've had over your career, Brian. So trying to remember some of the details.
Trying to remember them.
That's right. So what do you make of free agency yesterday? I mean, your famous words of the past have been that's when a lot of times the biggest mistakes could happen. And with a flat cap, you know, was it difficult to maneuver yesterday down in Pittsburgh? What do you make of the moves that you guys made and how the league kind of shaked out?
Well, we're really happy. We didn't do much because we didn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were shopping at Kmart, but we're really happy. We added two guys that we think will improve our team, Brock McGinn and Danton Heinen today. Both guys we think will help us. So we're really happy. But, you know, they don't fall in the category of the big blockbuster deal. But we don't have any cap room, and we didn't have any picks in the draft, and we don't have many prospects coming. So we were kind of obliged to take a back seat or sit on the sidelines for this one. But I thought Ron Hextall did a good job. I think a lot of teams got better. I think the big activity, as much as I will tell you right now, you can take any of these deals that are over 5 years, and teams will be regretting them in about 3-4 years,
mm-hmm.
like they always do. They always age badly. That being said, I think it's good for our league when we have that much activity and that much money changing hands and that many players of note changing hands. I think it dominates the news cycle for us. So I was happy with the way it went. But like you guys said, we make more mistakes. And I say we, collective pronoun, I'm involved too. We make more mistakes at the trade deadline and on free agency than the rest of the year combined. So some of these deals will age horribly, but they'll make their teams better for 2, 3, 4 years.
Brian, do you have like a worst or a best free agent story from over the years that you like telling?
You know, I never did much at the trade deadline. I tried to make my deals in advance of the deadline. I did make a couple. I think Brad May was the trade deadline deal in Anaheim, and he was an important player for us. But I always felt it was like the blue light special at Kmart. And young people won't even remember this, but you guys might. They put a product on special. They'd say, blue light special on aisle 10. They'd have a deal on Brillo pads or lawn chairs or whatever. And next thing you know, it's 30 or 40 shopping carts jockeying for position, trying to grab this blue light special. And that's what I felt the trade deadline got like. And I think that, every year I check with the league. They're only awarding one Stanley Cup next year, I check.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to see 8 to 10 to 12 teams add pieces at the deadline this coming year in an effort to win the cup, or maybe just to make the playoffs, or maybe to win a round. But there's only one parade, so a lot of mistakes get made. And again, these contracts age poorly.
We're chatting with Brian Burke. On top of all that, you had Seattle, you know, lurking in the background this year, and the league went through the expansion process a few years ago with Vegas, and now went through it again this year, and you would have been a part of that process down in Pittsburgh. What do you think the league, or I guess yourself, Ron Hextall, the Pittsburgh Penguins, maybe learned about the Vegas process that you could apply to this one with Seattle?
Well, it was very different. Teams back then when Vegas came in were desperate to make deals to keep certain players. And Las Vegas exploited that brilliantly. And so they were able to get a Theodore or a Marchessault, get Alex Tuch. Mm-hmm. And so you look at the players they got, and more importantly, the draft picks they assembled. They put together like 10 draft picks. So this time around, everyone said to Seattle, we're not, take whomever you'd like. We're going to submit our list, take whomever you'd like. And so where Ronnie did a good job was using his cap space to leverage a few things out, but they had nowhere near the same advantage that Vegas did because teams got burned last night.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, that is still somewhat of a shock to the system that Vegas was that good and continues to be as good as they are. Like, going to a cup final in their inaugural season is just incredible. And we'll see what Seattle makes of it, but that makes 32 teams in the league, and there's been some chatter for a while, the idea that maybe there should be an expanded amount of playoff teams, where it's been 16 for a long time. Back in the 80s, 21 teams in the league, 16 teams got in. Now 50% of teams make the playoffs. Would you entertain the idea of moving that back to maybe 20, maybe the idea of a play-in round like the NBA's been doing?
Well, that's an ownership call. I don't have the right to make that call. I've been very vocal in my past career as a sportscaster, and very vocal prior to that working for other teams, and said, no, 16's plenty, enough, and enough expansion too, by the way. I'm not sure how my ownership group feels about that, so I won't opine on that. I think we have enough teams, and I think we have enough teams in the playoffs. But again, that when you're a GM or a president of hockey operations, you don't get to make that call.
Right. Well, I mean, as you said, the owners will figure that out, and if it happens, everyone's still going to enjoy it, you know, even if you're a proponent. Like, I share your sentiments as well. I think 16 is enough, but more playoffs, I don't think I'd be complaining the night of. We had you on when you got the job, and we're asking you about the idea of, you know, running an operation with a guy like Sid and Gino within the organization. Now that you're into the off season, how calming is it, you know, even though you said you weren't overly active because of the cap scenario, knowing that, you know, come day one of camp, 87, 71 will be in there. What's that headspace like as the president of hockey operations with those two guys on your roster?
Well, add Letang, add Malkin, right. Add Rust, add Gensel. I mean, and Tristan Jarry was taking a lot of heat for his playoffs. He was brilliant for us. And by the way, if you go back and look at Flower's first two playoffs, they weren't great. So for a young goaltender to struggle the first time he goes to the circus is not troubling to me. I thought the kid played great for us. But to go back to your question, we've got three superstars that are on the back nine. They know it. We know it. They're still phenomenal players. Like, they all had good years last year. Sid might have had his best year in 4 years. And Chris Letang had his best year in 3 years for sure. And Malkin was really good for us, but he got hurt a couple times. So to me, we've got to see what we can do with this group before we give up. So it's really exciting. The cool thing here is you hear all this stuff about Sid, then you get here and you see it's true. He drives practice. He's a leader. He's a very popular player, but our team practices better than any team in the NHL, partly because our coaching staff invests so much time and preparation into it, and partly because Sid drives the bus.
Well, your head coach was recently announced as the head coach of Team USA, if it gets to that point at the Olympics, and obviously you have a long history with Team USA. I would assume he had your vote of confidence, and two-time cup winner, but do you look forward to that? I know it's not officially there yet, but if it gets to that point, how big of a boost will that be for the Americans having Mike Sullivan behind the bench?
Well, I think Mike Sullivan should have been one of the three finalists for Coach of the Year. And I don't usually whine about awards because all the people who are finalists are deserving. So you're kind of slapping one of them when you say that. But we won a division title with horrific injuries. He did a great job. He should have been a finalist. I'm not saying he should have won it. That would be unfair. But we're not surprised that the U.S. Olympic team asked him to be the coach. He's got international experience. He worked in the World Cup with me a few years back. He's been involved overseas before, so it's a logical thing for a guy who's got that great resume, two Stanley Cup rings, has a great coaching resume, has worked with other great coaches, worked with Tortorella, and worked with other guys. So I think it's a great choice. I was not consulted. I think after we went 0-3 in the World Cup, Brian, I think I'm kind of persona non grata with Team USA.
They're not calling you anymore?
Well, a U.S. team has, and the U.S. team has never gone over in a tournament except that one. So they weren't too happy with us.
Okay. Well, you still have 2010, Berkey. I mean, that worked out pretty well for everyone involved. And,
yep.
You know, the Americans.
That was great.
And listen, the Americans, where they're at right now, you know about the history and you know, the mid-90s, that was, I would say, the pinnacle of, I mean, 1980, clearly. But in the 90s when, you know, the World Cup was on and beat Canada, and you had Medano and Roenick and Chelios and so many great Americans. But you look at all of them now, Matthews up here, Eichel, Kane, the Tkachuks. I mean, it's the defense with Jones, Werenski, Carlson, Hellebuck, and Net. You know, I don't see why they can't win a gold or why they won't certainly compete for. There's so many good young American players.
Yeah, and I think that was the golden era of USA hockey, was the 96 World Cup. So you go back to the seminal moments. And Canada's used to winning lots of tournaments. It's not a big deal for them. But for us, we point back to 1980, Miracle on Ice, the Gretzky trade, the 96 World Cup, the Samuelis buying the Ducks, the relocation of the Minnesota North Stars to Dallas, expansion into Phoenix. There's a timeline here. And now the U.S. is producing players from, I think there's a player from 37 states that has played in the NHL now.
Wow.
Might be more. Close to 40, including Montana when Jake Sanderson gets there, and Alaska, Scotty Gomez a long time ago, but a couple more. Like, it's crazy. And so they've done a great job. USA Hockey's done a tremendous job. But I think the highest percentage of superstars was probably still around 96, and now we're catching up with greater depth, and soon we'll have an equal number of superstars.
Yep, it's really an incredible spot that Team USA finds themselves in. And USA Canada, let's hope it gets to that point. It's long overdue for the international hockey. It's always great to catch up with you, Brian, and enjoy the rest of the offseason, and I'm sure we'll do it again in the fall.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
You got it. There he is, Brian Burke, the president of hockey operations down in Pittsburgh, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Don't be nervous having your trade-in appraised. Maple Toyota makes it easy, offering the maximum value for your vehicle. Get your no-obligation appraisal today, MapleToyota.com. There he is, your old friend, Brian Burke. You'd be in there with the pressers with him a lot when he was in Toronto.
Oh, yeah, man. There were some, like, unbelievable press conferences.
No one better at giving a press conference.
Remember the rats? Remember the John Tavares when he came out and said, we want to trade for John Tavares?
Mm-hmm.
Or trade for the
trade
right
for
to
the
pick number
the first
one?
First overall pick, yep.
Like, can you imagine if Kyle Dubas came out like a few weeks ago and said, we want to get the number one pick, we want to take
Owen Power?
It's like,
guy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. No, he was, he took the city by storm when he got here. And he's a great interview. And you and I, we've interviewed him a ton of times over the years. But it's always great to have him on. And we'll see. I mean, he's also incredibly candid about his situation in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Like, I was thinking, Hayes, like, when he said, like, we don't have any prospects coming. Like,
yeah.
You had Dubas on the other day. Imagine if the response to the question you asked him was like, we don't have anyone.
We have nothing here. I have to be honest with you, Brian. We are currently looking over game tape of every KHL game, scouring, looking for someone we could sign who's under the age of 30.
Do you know anyone?
Do you know anybody that's looking for anything that might have game tape that we can pretend to like? Because we have nothing.
That's not good, eh?
Actually, how much would you appreciate that answer, though?
Oh, man.
Like, Dubas knew it was coming, man. Because, like, he listed off, like, forwards, defensemen, goalies. He had everything
right. It's like
running.
Everyone.
And I give him credit for that because I had been beating that drum for a while. I'm like, they need some kids to step in here. Like, the Leafs need some kids to contribute.
Yeah.
Because, you know, listen, if there's, you need depth, You need players on the cheap. You know, like ideally that would be like you're a well-oiled machine and it's, you know, this is almost impossible to get to that level. But Hyman goes out. Here's this 22-year-old kid you've been grooming.
Well, that's what
Freddie
Tampa
leaves.
Has.
Here's the 23-year-old goalie you've been grooming.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to make $850 or $950 for the next 2 years and take advantage. But easier said than done, understandably. But, yeah, he's like, no cap space, no picks, no prospects.
Okay. We got to do something, but we don't have any money. Kmart.
We'll see what happens here. All right.
Does Kmart still exist?
I don't think so. Not up here. It might in the States. Kmart's been gone for a long, long time. Like, when in doubt, I ask, does the grappler know Kmart? Like, when in doubt, Al's brother, does he know what a Kmart is? Like, that's my line of demarcation, you know, whether I'm older or younger. And I think the grappler would know about the Kmart.
What about Zellers?
No way he knows Zellers.
Okay.
No chance. I think there might be a couple of sneaky Zellers still, though, in Toronto. Like, I feel like there's a couple hanging around.